welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. Here's another one of our shows that we recorded at the Pioneer Ladies Luncheon. This is an episode from Ma Perkins.
The network radio years span from 1926 to 1962. In fact, September 30th, 1962 is referred to as the day radio died. Programming was exceptionally diverse. Cooking shows, farm reports, Sunday sermons, game shows, musical reviews, opera, comedy, kids shows, mysteries, soap operas, every other mode of audio entertainment you can or perhaps never have imagined. We hope you'll enjoy our time with you today. We're going to begin with a soap opera, Ma Perkins. All right, familiar one. It premiered on August 14th, 1933 as a 15-minute program on WLW in Cincinnati, Ohio. Oxidol laundry powder was the sponsor. A lot of us still remember the Oxidol commercials. The show signed off on November 25th, 1960. The character of Ma Perkins was that of an ageless widow, probably in her 60s, who owned and managed a lumber yard in Rushville Center, a town with a population of about 4,000. Salt of the earth, she lived by the golden rule. Core characters were Ma, her business partner, Shuffle Schober, her three children, their children, and assorted in-laws. Townspeople came and went as the plots evolved. Most interestingly, the actress who played Ma was Virginia Payne, who was only 23 when the show debuted, and she performed in every single one of the 7,065 broadcasts. In spite of her youth, she was very convincing as a mature character. Her identity was carefully kept secret, and when public personal appearances were required, she wore a wig, frumpy clothes, and spectacles. At the height of its fame, Oxidol's own Ma Perkins was heard in Hawaii, Canada, and all across Europe on Radio Luxembourg.
And now for Ma Perkins, brought to you by Procter & Gamble, the makers of Oxidol. Well, yesterday the folks heard Paul Henderson's last will and testament. It was a very short document, leaving everything to Faye. Paul's estate was a good one, so Faye's security and that of the child she is going to have are assured. But Faye doesn't care about that, nor does she seem to care about the baby she's expecting. All Faye thinks about is Paul. Can Ma bring Faye through her grief and despair? Make Faye see that life goes on, whether we will it or not? Well, right now, Ma and Shuffle are walking home from the lumberyard to the October dusk. Rushville Center is peaceful and quiet as... Listen.
Tarnation. Yeah, there's a real nip in the air tonight. Another couple of weeks and we'll be taking out the old earmuffs.
Oh, we'll have Indian summer first. This is the first real chilly day we've had since we got back.
Oh, there's Lonnie Konvalinka in his new car. Evening, Lonnie.
Hello, Mr. Konvalinka. She sent Faye the sweetest note.
Mrs. Lonnie?
Yes. Oh, she's such a nice person. Oh,
practically everybody in town must have sent a note to Faye.
Yes.
Come on, Ma. It's a terrible thing, but you ain't going to let it color your whole life. You ain't going to let it discourage you.
It's going to color her whole life, Faye's. I guess on the day I die, Shuffle, I'll look back and I'll see how my life sort of divided into three parts. The first was with Pa, till he left us. The second part, with the children, getting Evie married and Faye. And the third part, now. Faye being widowed after less than a year of marriage. Faye, who'd ever thought she'd be the one? The day she was graduated from high school, all the girls in their nice clean dresses. Why, she was the second youngest in her class, and now she's the one who... It's funny. It is funny.
She'll come out of it, Ma. She'll get back into the scheme of things down here. Her friends taking things easy. She'll be okay. Remember, she's young, Ma, and youth ain't never sat down and cried and cried and... never stopped crying. In a couple of weeks, you'll be taking her down to buy some new dresses, and she'll look at herself in the mirror, and just by accident, she'll eye the new fall hats, and she'll say, you name one woman who can resist the temptation of a new hat. especially Faye. She always did have a weakness for the darndest bonnets I ever saw.
Well, Shuffle, I hope you're right. But you mustn't forget that we ain't got too long to wait while she recovers. If she keeps on grieving and mourning through the next few weeks, she and her baby both will have a... Well, Tom Stevens is worried already. No, the thing that's going to cure Faye is this.
What are you waving your hand at? What do you mean, this? You mean old man Johnson raking up the leaves out there in his front lawn? Evening, Mr. Johnson. Getting duffer every more, isn't he?
No, I don't mean Mr. Johnson especially, but yes, Mr. Johnson, among other things. Shuffle, if we'll only look around us, we'll see so much to take the sting out of our sorrows. That's what I meant when I waved my hand at Rushville Center. And Mr. Johnson raking his leaves, and the smell of the October leaves being burned on 20 lawns, and the yellow house lights blinking on as folks like us walk home after a day's work. Living. I guess what I'm talking about is living. Taking the days as they come, the seasons. Living for each day itself. Just living. Putting up the screens in May and taking them down in September. Doing your work. Listening on an October night to the wild geese. As a mile over our heads, they go on their wonderful and mysterious journey.
Yep, that sure is a wonderful sound.
You know, Shuffle, when I was a little girl, my father used to stand with me outside our house of an October afternoon and show me the wild birds going south. Looked sort of like a smoky smudge. And one year, I must have been six or so, a gray goose feather fell right at my feet. And my father laughed and he said, "Hold on to that, young lady. The bird will be back in the spring to get it, or maybe to drop you another feather." And I asked my father, somehow it impressed me, "Year after year, will that same goose be flying right over our house?" He smiled sadly and said, "If you'll be here to find the feather, the goose will drop it for you." I'm a woman grown, and I've never forgotten that little incident. And ever since, I've liked the idea of year after year, the regularity of the seasons, the mysterious way of God, moving those birds across 1,000 miles a day and night, and empty air, and me standing here, a part of it, because I'm part of it. And that's what I'd like my children to know, especially Faye. I'd like her to see that if we'll only be there to find it, the gray goose feather will always come, telling us that the world goes on and that's all right with the world.
I guess that's the story of our lives, Ma. The lives of you and me and the rest of us who stay in all the forgotten little villages and let the rest of the world go by. Except we don't let the rest of the world go by. It's the folks in a hurry who let it go by. Us, we got time to take it in.
Yes, Shuffle. That's it exactly. And that's the secret of peace. Let each day come. Take it as it comes. Take it for everything it has. And when it goes, you've lived that day. Now, if Faye will only see that. Yes, if Faye will only see it.
Yep. 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 But Faye couldn't be in better hands, Ma. So don't worry. You got a good recipe for living. If anybody can teach it to her, it's you. Just give her enough time and she'll come through with flying colors.
Yes, if there'll be time enough. Well, here we are. You said you're going someplace for supper tonight, Shuffle?
Oh, I'm having a quick bite. Then I'm going to a meeting of the volunteer fire department. I missed the last meeting. We're having a big discussion. Should we have a bingo party for our annual blowout, or should we do it like in Three Rivers and give a masquerade and a carnival? Opinion is divided 50-50, and, well, the arguments will be coming thick and fast. Wouldn't miss it for one of your suppers, Ma.
And on which side are you going to throw the weight of your opinion, Shuffle?
Well, whichever side needs a feller with a good loud voice, I'm their man. Well, good night, Ma.
Good night, Shuffle. See you tomorrow.
Yes, Ma. Night. I remember what I said. Don't worry.
I won't. And I think a masquerade would be more fun than bingo.
Then I'm on the side of the masquerade, and the bingo fillers ain't got a chance.
Shuffle, shuffle.
Yes, I can see that. Oh, did somebody come in, Faye?
What? Who on earth?
Oh, hello. Gladys Pendleton came over to pay us a call. We were waiting for you.
Why, Gladys Pendleton. How nice of you, Gladys. I seen your mother downtown a couple hours ago. It was good of you to come, child.
Oh, good evening, Miss Perkins. I came over to tell Faye how I told her that she has my sympathy. Oh, I'm sorry. It was such a terrible thing.
Thank you very much, Gladys. Faye, wouldn't Gladys like some tea, or maybe she'd like...
Oh, no, thank you. Faye has already offered me. I can't stay.
Well, you'll stay till I go up and wash my face and come down again. We ain't seen you in a long time, Gladys. How have you been? You're looking real well.
Thank you. Oh, I've been fine. Your sister told my mother this morning that Paul left a good estate. Are you planning on traveling?
No. I'm going to have a baby, you know. I really hadn't thought much beyond that.
Oh, I'll tell you something, Faye. Don't let money matter too much. I know. It doesn't buy the things you want.
I know that, Gladys.
Well, I was the only kid in our class who had a fur coat. I was the only girl in high school with a roadster. So what? When I met somebody I really liked, I couldn't even keep him. He went and married someone else.
Gladys, you mean Paul? But that was such a long time ago.
Well, why do you think I came over here? Do you think I call on everyone I happen to have a nodding acquaintance with? I came because of Paul, because I...
I guess I understand. Thanks. Thanks for coming, Gladys. That's sort of... It's very nice of you. No, it's more than that.
Oh, it's... Well, I don't... I think I'll be going now. If there's anything I can do for you, let me know, Faye. Huh, there's a laugh. Maybe you're the one that should be doing something for me.
I don't understand. No, well, don't go.
Well, I must. What don't you understand? Don't you understand what I've been trying to tell you? Since I'm in the mood for confession, I'd trade places with you in a minute. You're better off than I can ever be. Oh, don't bother to get up. In a day or two, maybe we can have lunch together. Express my apologies to your mother. Good night.
But Gladys...
Faye, did you say that you... Well, where is she?
Gone. She said that she'd change places with me in 1 minute.
Gladys said that? Ooh, that was wise and good of her.
She must have meant the baby. Even a few months with Paul being better than nothing. She must have loved Paul all along.
Yes, maybe.
I guess you're right, Ma. Maybe there are other people in the world besides me.
To which Ma might say, thankfully, yes, it's as I said. Live in the present and the future, Faye, because life goes on and we with it. Has Faye begun to live again? Begun to feel herself a part of this world of ours again? Tomorrow, Faye and Ma have some interesting visitors, old friends of ours. So be sure to listen again tomorrow. So Gladys Pendleton says she'd change places with Faye in 1 minute. And Faye sees that perhaps she's not the only person in the world. Well, tomorrow, Faye hears more advice, and soon we're going to hear more about Paul's will. So be sure to listen again. This is Moki O'Reilly speaking for the makers of Oxydol.
So I hope that inspired you to buy more Oxydol, because that's the whole point, right?
Chuck Wagon Tales was a radio show that was broadcast from San Francisco. Here's the first episode we did, Ghost Town. We kind of ran out of time, so I want all my cast to think you've just walked into the radio studio and an assistant producer came running out and grabbed all five of you to do this show, cold.
The American Radio Theater presents Ghost Town, the first episode of Chuck Wagon Tales from June 20th, 1948.
Charlie James ran a sun-beaten hand over his face. It was caked with dust, and his lips were hard and cracked. He lifted his eyes slowly, and he ran them around the horizon. Sand, mile after mile of brown sand, seemed to quiver under the burning rays of the sun. Charlie shook his head. It was the soul-withering desert, and Charlie was faced with the unalterable fact that, through no fault of his own, he was afoot in the fiery heart of it.
And so begins Ghost Town, the first exciting story in a new series of Chuck Wagon Tales, brought to you each Sunday at this time by H. Moffat Company of San Francisco, producers of extra fine, extra rich, manteca-fed beef.
It had been about 9:30 in the morning that Charlie James Pinto had stumbled on a hillock of hard dirt in the middle of Desert Valley, and he'd fallen forward, pitching him headlong into the soft dirt. It had been 10:30 when Charlie had finally given up hope of saving the horse, and he'd sent a merciful bullet crashing through the beast's head. It was 11 when Charlie first fully realized what had happened. Banda was able to throw the saddle sack and canteen over his shoulder and begin trudging forward. Toward where? Somewhere out here to the east, by the low ledge hardly visible in the distance, was his destination, East Mesa. They'd warned him not to attempt the trip to East Mesa alone, but Charlie James was not one to fear nature's most deadly traps. So Charlie started on his Pinto. For a full day, he'd pushed through the barren sands and till at last the sun had finished its slow swing across the sky, and night brought brief respite from the heat. Before dawn on this second day, he'd started again, and he'd been making good progress until... Charlie shook his head. He didn't want to think about it. Losing his horse any place would have been bad enough, but being set afoot in this place was enough to bring on madness without the help of the sun. And madness was the thing to be feared most of all. He had water enough for one, maybe 2 days, food for 3 or 4, but only if he conserved it and made every drop and every morsel give him strength for his long trek. Charlie was plodding along slowly when suddenly he thought he heard something and he stopped short. He listened, but there was no sound. No sound at all. Not even the slightest stirring of a wisp of breeze. The sand burned his feet through the soles of his shoes when he was standing still. So he began pushing on again. And then he was sure he heard it again. Yes, 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 there were footsteps. Footsteps. Pounding, pounding, crunching, crunching, pounding through the sand. Strange how loud a single sound became in an otherwise sound of his own footsteps, amplified by a trick of the mind until they became like the trampling of 100 feet. A trick of the mind. A trick of the mind. In just a moment before he determined that if he died, it wouldn't be through madness. The hottest part of the day was gone, and he was still alive, still moving forward. There was always an off chance that a little movement of air would spring up, and the still less likely possibility that someone would happen along. The sun was beginning to lean toward the west when Charlie's hazy vision fell on something that made his eyes widen. Ahead of him, on the ground slanted off into a hollow, and above the crest of sand appeared the flat front of a building. Shirley had heard too much about desert visions to start toward it on the run. But instead, he kept his eyes on the spot, and he kept moving forward at the same pace. As he approached, another roof came into sight, and then several more. This was no mirage. It was a town. He'd come out of the desert alive. Charlie tossed the saddle sack off his back, and he swung the canteen down, lifted it to his lips, and drained its contents. Then he started at a fast pace. He came across what had once been a wagon trail, and he followed it along toward the town. He found a sign along the way, a sign covered with brown dust. He wiped it off with his hand.
Gilpatrick.
Charlie had never heard of a town by that name, but that didn't matter. He staggered past the first building and into what appeared to be the main street. Slanting rays of the sun fell on dusty gray buildings and slipped through the gaping holes that had once been windows. Charlie mustered enough voice to call out,
"Hey!"
There was no answer. The town was deserted. Charlie staggered to the nearest door, and he pushed it open, and he fell to the floor in sheer exhaustion. It was dark when he awoke, dark and cool. His muscles were still aching and his feet still throbbing, but it was cool. And at that moment, that was all that seemed important. He reached for his canteen and was about to open it when he remembered, empty. He spilled all the water down his throat when first he was sure that he'd reached a town. A town. He might as well have been out under the cactus. On the remote chance that he might find water somewhere, Charlie struggled to his feet and he began a search. He combed every inch of the place, haunted through every building. But it was no use. Nowhere in the whole shell of what had once been a town could he find the tiniest drop of moisture or a single crumb of food. At last he slumped down on a broken step and he buried his face in his hands.
A ghost town! A ghost town! I get out of the desert. Now I'm going to die in a ghost town!
Who says you're going to die?
Charlie looked up quickly. The rays of the moon fell on a stooped figure standing before him. In his amazement, Charlie jumped to his feet and he spoke quickly.
Who are you? How did you get here?
I live here.
But where were you? I looked through every building.
So you think I'm a ghost? Every ghost town ought to have a ghost, huh? Yeah, so you tried to lick the desert, eh? Well, reckon what you want most is a drink of water, huh?
Charlie nodded his head quickly. Speaking again would be too much of a strain. The old man lumbered along, beckoning him to follow. And when they'd reached the centermost building along the single street of the town, the stranger stopped and he pointed.
In here.
But there ain't any water in there. I searched the place.
Y'all searched, did you? Well, that's good. Let me show you.
They went inside. The building had once been a store, and the old man led the way behind a counter. Beneath it was a trap door, a door that led down a rickety pair of stairs and into a chamber below. The walls were of wood, propped up to keep the soft dirt from falling in. The old man had lighted a lantern, and as Charlie's eyes became accustomed to the light, he could see. From between the boards on one side, a tiny stream of water trickled into a barrel below. He asked no questions, but he leaped for it and he appeased his thirst. When he's finished finally drinking, the stranger tossed a gesture toward a large tin box in the corner. Charlie opened it, and he found it was filled with food. Dried out food, but food. After gnawing at a few crusts and resting in the coolness of the basement, Charlie felt better. He turned to his strange host, who crouched in the shadows in the corner.
I don't know who you are, partner, but you sure saved my life.
Yeah. I saved your life, didn't I, huh? Now I'm even. I took one, I saved one.
You took
took one?
Surprised, ain't you? Yeah. Oh, I murdered a man for his gold. Maybe 10-15 years ago. I've been hiding here ever since. Ah, I wish you could have seen all the times they come out to look for me. Been here to Kilpatrick 100 times, but I hide out down here, and it took them 10, maybe 15 years to find me.
But they did find you?
Yep, they found me about 2 weeks ago. Took me into town to try me.
Then you must have escaped.
I'm here again. Can't keep old Dan away from Kilpatrick for long.
But how?
Oh, you're wondering how I could live out here for all this time? It's easy. Plenty of water for one or two men lease out into this barrel. And then the only work one got to do is go in the East Mesa once a month when it's moonlight to steal some food. You can live here with me if you want.
If I want to?
Live here all your life. You don't have to do nothing unless you want, except to stealing some food.
Oh, no, thanks. I got to be getting to East Mesa. I think I can make it all right from here.
Oh, sure you can make it. Easy trip from here. There'll be enough moon tomorrow night. It's easy if you travel at night. Well, if you're going, you better get some sleep.
It was nearly morning when Charlie curled up and old Dan left him to sleep in a cool of the cellar. And it was dark again when old Dan stirred him and told him it was time to leave. Charlie gathered his things together painfully, swallowed a few more dry crusts and all the water he could drink, and then following Dan out to the edge of town. The old man pointed to a tall mesa silhouetted against the rising moon in the distance.
You head for that, son. Yeah, and you can't miss. When you get to town, you all tell him that old Dan saved your life. He took one, and he saved one. He saved one. That'll give him a start.
Toward the middle of the morning, he walked into East Mesa. Several of the townspeople gathered around him when they learned that he'd crossed the desert by foot. Charlie felt that this was the right time to acknowledge his debt to Dan.
I'd never come out alive if it hadn't been for old Dan at Kilpatrick.
Old Dan, you say? How long ago was you at Kilpatrick?
Well, just last night.
Oh, my lands. Better come with me, son. You need rest. Bad.
Wait a minute. What's the matter? What are you looking at me so funny for?
Well, son, you see, we tried old Dan for murder here last week.
Oh, I know that. He told me, but he's back in Kilpatrick now.
We tried old Dan for murder and found him guilty. He died dangling from a noose 5 days ago.
American Radio Theater has presented Ghost Town, the first episode of Chuckwagon Tales, produced and directed by Joy Jackson. It was originally broadcast in San Francisco on June 20th, 1948. In our cast, you heard Dave Barker as Frank, Pat McNally as Charlie, Renaud Leboeuf as the old man, and Esther Geddes McVeigh as the lady. Sound effects by Penny Swanberg, engineering by Ron Ailey and Mike Wheeler. Additional music by Kevin MacLeod. www.incompetech.com. I'm your announcer, Bob Hutchison, and this is ART, the American Radio Theater.
We'll be back in just a moment. We return to treasures old and new from ART. Hey, let's listen to a little bit from Kraft Music Hall.
The Kraft Music Hall with Bing Crosby, John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the music maids and Lee, Yuki, the charioteers, and Bing's glamorous guests for this evening, Miss Cass Daly and Miss Marilyn Maxwell, both at the cinema. And here's Bing Crosby.
I-O-way, that's how they sing it in the tall corn song. Other people call it Iowa, and they're both just a little bit wrong. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's the robin in the willow. It's the postmaster's friendly hello. Iowa, what a beautiful name. You remember it wherever you roam. It's the sumac in September. It's the squeak of your shoes in the snow. It's the Sunday school and the old river band. Songs on the porch after dark. It's the corner store and a penny to spend. You and your girl in the park. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's a promise for tomorrow and a memory of long ago. The picnic ground and the whippoorwills call, acorns and dew on the lawn. It's the county fair and the odd fellas hall, meeting the circus at dawn. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's a promise for tomorrow and a memory of long, long ago. Iowa, what a beautiful name. When you say it like we say it back home.
Iowa.
The old Kraft Music Hall friends beamed out to battle stations of the world, where many an American citizen longs for news from home. Part of our job to see that he gets it. That's what V-mail is for. Use it. Don't back off on that letter-writing chore. Write a letter tonight and every night to some man in the service and get it to him the fastest, surest way by V-mail. Augmenting the regular Kraft Music Hall group this evening, we're loaded with glamour. We are really loaded. Two of the cinema's loveliest chicks, by name, Miss Cass, Speak Low to Me Daily of Paramount, and Miss Marilyn Maxwell of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. This is, in fact, Marilyn's third visit to the hall in as many weeks. Still look good to you, Marilyn?
Hmm? Better than ever. Where is Yuki?
Oh, that boy may not return for days.
Oh, is he still in trouble at court, Bing?
Oh, yes. Too bad, too bad. That boy has been delayed in the shade. He may not be out for some time. Too bad.
Hey, I'm back.
Too bad. Too bad.
I guess you think just because you came to court for me, I not only owe you my future, but I also owe you my life.
And I hope you're bad pay.
Well, the next time I ask you to come down to court, Bing, do me a favor.
What's that?
Don't come. See, what I needed was a character witness.
You mean you had no witness?
No character. Next time I'll ask Mr. Cottoner to come down to court for me.
Oh, Yuke, what can I do?
Well, all you have to do is tell the jury you know me. Think what that would do for my reputation.
Yeah, think what it would do for mine.
I would have come down to court, Yuki, but I don't think I could have swayed the jury.
You could have swayed the Hall of Justice.
Bing, do you mean to say you didn't go to court and speak for Yuki?
Oh, perish forbid, Marilyn. I not only went, I made one of the grandest speeches since the Gettysburg Address. I was great. They adored me. They adored me. I quote verbatim. Your Honor, I said, if you prosecute this boy, it's a crime. If this boy goes to jail, it's a crime. Just take a good look at his face.
What did the judge say?
It's a crime.
You boy, he's just a... Navy's on their toes tonight.
Yuke, did any of your family show up at court?
Oh, sure. My brother, Yonko. He testified in my behalf.
Now, who's going to testify for Yonko?
You know, he told them all about me.
He did?
And he told the truth, too. Just like George Washington.
What happened?
He gets out Washington's birthday.
Well, I was on trial once, and in 1 minute, I was able to show the judge cause for releasing me.
Well, I showed the judge my deposition, I showed my credentials, and I showed my references.
I showed my knees.
Oh. Well, you didn't the judge show any sympathy at all?
No, but at the last minute, I got a great idea how to soften them up. I hired a woman to come down to court and say she was my mother.
Your mother? Did it work?
Well, I put her on the witness stand. She put on a sad face, looked up at the judge and said, "Please be merciful, Your Honor. I brought this boy into the world."
What happened?
Mother got 90 days.
Next time you see Mom, give her my best. In the meantime, Marilyn and I turn to an item of mutual understanding called I've Got a Lot in Common with You. Shall we, Miss M? You're lonesome.
I'm stranded.
You're supposed.
I'm candid.
And we're both left-handed.
I seem to have a lot in common with you. You slay me.
I floor you.
You vex me.
I bore you.
But I can't ignore you.
We seem to have a lot in common, we two. Two noble souls designed above.
I'm so-so.
Not too-too.
Or oh-so.
Thank heaven, we know so lonesome stranded.
Super candid.
Silly or savage.
As long as we're happy.
I've got a lot in common with you. Character that we both have much in common with.
One of the shortages that really hits many of you homemakers today is the shortage of time. Well, I can tell you of a food that saves you shopping time and cooking time. It's Kraft Dinner, with both ingredients for macaroni and cheese in a single package. Yes, and it's delicious macaroni and cheese that you cook in 7 minutes. You see, each package of Kraft Dinner contains not only a quick-cooking macaroni, but also plenty of Kraft grated to whisk in cheese flavor in a hurry. 7 minutes at the stove, and you have fluffy, tender macaroni with cheese goodness through and through. A hearty, time-saving main dish. A point saver, too. So get several packages tomorrow. Ask for Kraft Dinner.
Tell me, how did you feel when you come out
the wilderness?
Oh, come out
the wilderness.
Come out
the wilderness.
Tell me, how did you feel when you come out
the wilderness? Leaning on the Lord.
Is back. 1918. Food Administrator Hoover decrees wheatless and meatless days to help win the war to end war. 1918. Consumers gasp as egg prices soar to 57 cents a dozen. 1918. And on Wednesday evenings in the parlor, young men can be heard saying to their girls,
"Electricity is a wonderful thing, ain't it?"
"In what way, Harry?"
"Well, you can just walk into a room and turn it on, or you can turn it out."
"Well, what's wonderful about turning it out?"
"I'll turn it out and show you."
No, Harry, don't. Harry.
"Listen, Hoover wants us to conserve light, don't he? So we can win the war, huh?"
"Yeah, but if my pop comes home and finds you here with a light out, there'll be a war, all right, but you won't win it."
"No, it might be worth it."
"Turn on the light."
"Okay. Heck, your pop will probably be home earlier than usual anyway tonight."
"Well, what makes you think so?"
"Well, the Literary Digest says they're cutting pretzels off all the free lunch counters."
"Why?"
"Pro-German." "Here you have the softest hand."
"Oh, it's a funny business to be in, the pretzel business."
"It might be a good business for a guy who could give it a new twist."
"Well, Pop may miss his pretzels, but the war is a success for my little brother."
"Glad to hear it. Now, your little hand,
Didn't you read in the paper the other day that there's a shortage on castor oil?"
"Well, the kid could go broke, your little brother. My old man used to give me a dime every time I took my castor oil."
"Well, my little brother doesn't get any money."
"My old man used to save the dimes for me till I had a dollar."
"Then he gave you the dollar?"
"No, he bought more castor oil." "You know, your hands, I just..."
"Harry, have you heard this new tune?" "Here goes. Somebody ought to know how to do the tickle toe."
"Oh, that one, yeah, that's a good little ditty. But have you heard this one? Oh, we don't want the bacon, we don't want the bacon. All we want is a piece of the rye."
I like more romantic songs, like... "I'm sorry, dear." How did they go, Harry?
"I'm sorry, dear. So sorry, dear.
I'm sorry I made you cry."
"Oh, I love that one. But how about the... Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning."
"Harry, is that romantic?"
"Well, it's a matter of mood, you know." "How about this?"
"After you've gone, left me crying. After you've gone, there's no denying. You'll feel blue, you'll feel sad, you'll miss the dearest friend you've ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it, there'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart'll break like mine. You'll want me only after you've gone, after you've gone away. After you've gone, left me crying. After you've gone, there's no denying. You feel blue, and you're gonna feel sad. You miss the dearest time you ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it, baby. There'll come a time when you'll regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine. You'll want me only after you've gone, after you've gone away.
Ever a happy visitor to the Old Craft Music Hall, my co-worker at Paramount, murmuring cast daily, is at present clocking many a giggle in Paramount's Technicolor musical saga of the Old West, Riding High. Casual cast daily is cutting quite a niche for herself in pictures, and I might add, on the radio. Take this evening, for instance. I'm sure, Kathy Gal, everybody here in the hall is glad to see your back.
Honestly? Well, gee, why doesn't anyone tell me that to my face?
They try, Cassie Gal, and then, well, that's when they're glad to see you back.
Say, Cass, I heard you a couple of weeks ago play an army camp with Bob Hope.
Is this true, Cass?
Yes, it is, Bing.
Cutting capers with that callow comic. Traitor?
Oh, no, I'm not. Hope got the guys at the camp to run a contest to see who was the most glamorous. Vera Vegg or me.
Who won? Who won?
Jerry Colonna.
I figured.
Camping.
Oh, a gal can around any camp.
No kidding. No kidding. I found out what all those army initials mean.
Oh, meaning stuff like KP for kitchen police, MP for military police, and...
Yeah, I think I'm their pinup. You know something, Bing?
What?
I think I'm their pinup girl, too.
You? A pinup?
Yeah. Every time I pass, they say P.U.
Well, it's great work. Really, it is. It's great work that Hope's doing, playing these camps.
Yeah, it sure is.
They tell me that after he leaves the camp, the whole outfit is ready to fight.
Well, he speaks well of you, Bing.
Nonsense, Cass, nonsense. A kind word from me would never occur to old Spout Snout.
Well, now, why should it be nice to you? Calling them hockey hooks and shoe face and plaster puss and loop snoot? Hey, nobody
could...
You're
playing it a little, ain't I?
Nobody could be that awful looking. I'll fight for that boy any day, believe me. He's just as good looking as I am.
Whose side are you fighting on?
Well, I'm fighting for my Uncle Sam. And I'm plenty busy with war work, too.
Well, is it true that you're working in a defense plant, Cass?
Say, that reminds me. Why in the world do they call it a defense plant?
Well, why not?
Well, there are thousands of men there, and I've never had to use my defense. I mean, I...
Well, at least you're helping to win the war.
Yeah, and if I got a schedule, first thing in the morning I'm down at the blood bank helping the men make out their applications.
Well, that's pretty important work.
Important? Do you know any better way to get telephone numbers? I mean...
Spy, Cass, for shame, you bad, bad girl, you.
Oh, what do you mean, spy, Cass, for shame, you bad, bad girl, you? I may get sick someday and need a transfusion.
Well, how will you know which man has your type blood?
Bing boy, any man is my type.
See you later.
Don't go, Bing. Yeah, no. At least buy a war bond from me, will you? Come on. Will you, Mr. Bing? Gee, Whittaker's, all you need is $18.75.
I'll buy a bond cast if you'll trust me for some of the money. I only got part of it.
Now, what part?
75 cents.
Gee, I'd love to help you sell bonds, Cass. Well, swell, Marilyn. Gee, you could kiss every man who buys a bond.
Both of them?
Well, we'll take turns. You kiss the first, I'll kiss the second, you kiss the third.
Everybody will be playing the odds.
Yeah, and after we sold our quota of bonds, you can come over to the hospital and help me be a nurse's aide.
You, a nurse's aide?
Yeah.
What are you doing, releasing a sulfa drug for active duty?
Like that, Ken. I'm so solid with those pill pushers at the hospital that the doctors and the patients gave me a great honor.
They did? What?
Well, they got together and voted me Miss Take a Powder of 1944.
Like all other men, Cass, I admire the gal who does lots of war work.
Well, do you really, Mr. Scott?
I sure does. You don't know the real me, only seeing the gay, frivolous, musical me. Sometimes you should see my other side.
I've given up long trips for the duration.
Well, you certainly have tossed yourself into a maelstrom of war work, haven't you, Cass?
Well, there's a reason, Bing.
Huh?
Yeah. Hmm. A few weeks ago, I got a letter from a soldier, and I think he's kind of broken our engagement.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I'm scared to open the letter.
Well, then what makes you think he broke the engagement?
Well, on the envelope, he wrote free.
Nothing out of the way about that. All soldiers write free on the outside of the envelope.
Yeah, but under it he wrote, goody.
Well, Cass, maybe you'd do better at the Hollywood canteen.
Oh, Ken, I go there all the time. Yeah, the other day I sat down with a lonesome soldier from Arizona, talked to him for a little while, and he told me I reminded him of his hometown.
Oh, that must have made you feel great.
Great? His hometown of Tombstone.
Well, don't you ever dance at the canteen?
Don't I ever dance at the canteen? I dance so much that I call my feet dogs for defense. But when I'm at the canteen, I dance every dance.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Would be if I had another partner.
Perhaps the G.I.s don't dig you as a big star, Cass.
Well, I think you got something there, Bing. They don't seem to know that I almost got to play Orson Welles, opposite Orson Welles in Jane Eyre.
You did? What happened?
He got another Jane and gave me the air.
Well, really, I had no idea you were the type of intellectual who would appeal to Orson Welles.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, then you must spend an ear being
done. Well, I'll lay it on me.
Well, all right.
Come along.
Well, okay.
I used to be aesthetic, they say. I love a drama, art, and ballet. Them a theater wing came over.
Say,
forget about Pavlova. Learn to cut a rug. So now I'm a jitterbug. Hey, 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 hey. I'm getting caught for my country at the state store canteen. The hottest working junior hostess you.
You hear of a soldier, sailor.
love the theater. I loved it with my heart. Then the theater wing said, "Cashier, won't you come and play your part?" So I took a 2-week beauty course, had my hair bobbed. Now I don't look like an old lady anymore. Look like an old man. And then they told me, as a hostess, I'd have to check and dance a bit.
Thus, friends, cast daily in one of her chansons en team. Something a mite more commercial, less en team, is sans chanson. Regardez, what am I saying?
Have you ever stopped to think that many of our favorite foods need a partner? For instance, with bread, we want a spread. With potatoes, gravy. Lettuce must have its dressing. And then, of course, another natural combination is macaroni and cheese. Many of you think that last is not too easy these days, but it is. Buy the box that gives you both ingredients for swell macaroni and cheese. Kraft Dinner. Kraft Dinner gives you delicious macaroni and cheese in just 7 minutes cooking time. For each box contains a special fast-cooking macaroni. And, two, plenty of golden Kraft grated so you can whisk in the cheese flavor in a jiffy. 7 minutes at the stove, and your dinner main dish is ready. Fluffy, light macaroni with cheese flavor through and through. Here's a point-saving main dish that's no fuss or trouble, but actually saves you time. Cooking time and shopping time, too. Try it real soon, but be sure to get the box with both ingredients for delicious, quick-made macaroni and cheese. Be sure it's Kraft Dinner.
Seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart and mind embraces.
Well, that pinches me off right in an embrace, folks. The old KMH is Thursday, but another meeting takes up next week. Same time we got started tonight when we feature Marilyn Maxwell and my friend and associate on many a camp show, Phil Silver. Try to dig us next Thursday, huh? Good night.
Marilyn Maxwell appeared through the courtesy of Metro Golden Mayer, producers of Madam Chili. The Fast Music Hall comes to you from Hollywood Radio City.
Gee, that's all I've got time for today. Please check out our podcasts on our website, www.americanradiotheater.org. You know, we put up a new podcast every month. If you want to hang out with other folks playing old-time radio, it's radioutofthepast.org in the Fred Bertelson Room. On Thursdays from 5:30 Pacific, that's 8:30 Eastern, and also on Saturday, 6 o'clock Pacific, that's 9 o'clock Eastern. Hope to see you soon!